Welcome to Legend Lore with Luis and Lauren, where we talk about Pathfinder 2nd Edition.
I'm Luis, and I'm a developer at Paizo working on the Pathfinder Lost Omens line. I've been playing tabletop RPGs for over 15 years, written for dozens of Pathfinder products, and I also write the Monsters Physique blog here on the No Direction Network.
And I am Lauren, your Dova Queen, and I've been playing RPGs for almost 20 years. I write the Dear Dova Queen advice column and the Bend the Knee blog here on No Direction. You can also watch me play in Adventurous, Stellar, Fall of Plaguestone, and the Three Ring Adventure podcasts. And this week, we're talking about Exploration Mode.
Now, before we get started, we just want to mention that although we know a lot about what we're talking about when it comes to Pathfinder, we want to remind you that we're not providing any kind of official answers. We're here to offer advice, and you can use that how you like. Remember, the official word from Paizo is the only official ruling out there. But don't forget that it's your game. Do what works best for your table.
Okay, so picture this, Luis, all right? Indiana Jones is deep in the jungle, and he stumbles across... I shouldn't say stumbles, he's a doctor. He discovers the lost temple that he was looking for. He goes to the entrance, and what does he do? He enters exploration mode. Exploration mode is how we apply some system mechanics to the things that we've already been doing in this game for decades already. When you say, I want to check for traps, exploration mode just gives you a way to codify that. So it's a little bit easier to be checking for traps. For example, instead of saying, I check for traps every time you enter an entirely new area, or every time you go 5 feet down the hallway, all you do is saying, I'm going to be doing the search action. Because saying, I check for traps every time you enter a new area, is all fine and well, but doing that, say, as a search action in exploration mode, means that you only have to say it that one time. You don't have to say it every time you come across a new dusty hallway. And it means that the GM knows you're looking for traps in each of those areas. They can't catch you up on one of those, well, you didn't say it this time, And you're automatically going to be looking for other stuff too, like secret doors and hidden goodies.
Yeah, exploration mode is something, like you mentioned, that we've been doing in the game for a long time. We've talked about, I look for traps, I detect magic, I keep an eye out for enemies and all that stuff. But it now has official rulings and rules tied with it to keep everyone on the same page more than anything else. If you wanted to, you could continue playing Pathfinder 2nd Edition the way you've been doing it before, where people just casually mention, here's what I'm doing, and the GM keeps track of that, and you can change that as you need to. You don't have to officially declare, I am using the search exploration tactic. You can just say, I'm looking around for traps, I'm looking around for secret doors. And that's actually what I do in my games. My players don't use the hard rules, hard names of, oh, I'm doing search, I'm doing detect magic, I'm scouting. But for games where there are newer players who maybe don't have those ideas kind of cemented into their mind of this is how you play the game, exploration mode is there to tell you, here's great things you can do while you're looking around, and it helps them understand what comes with each given tactic. It also means games like organized play games, everyone has the exact same set of tactics, and no one has to feel like, oh, I was trying to do this, but my GM didn't understand me. I can specifically say, oh, I'm searching, or the GM can specifically call out, what exploration mode tactic are you doing? So everyone is on the same page.
And this list is by no means comprehensive. If you have decided that the exploration action you're going to take is to constantly swap mosquitoes, because there's a lot of them, that there's not a constantly swap mosquitoes action on page 479 of the core rulebook. But your GM can say, sure, that's fine. You'll get a bonus to your fort save against malaria, perhaps, if that's what you're worried about.
Yeah, that's exactly the kind of things that can be expanded upon. And in fact, there are lots of adventures that have added new exploration mode tactics to supplement what's already there in the core rulebook. I know Age of Ashes has a number of them throughout the adventure path that are very specific to whatever scenario you're in. I think there's one where you might be sneaking around in a place, and it has a very specific version of sneaking around in an exploration tactics mode. I don't want to go into spoilers on it, but it has additional things you can do that the game has the framework of the basic exploration mode tactics that you can build upon or work from to give you new ideas. So, if there are a basic number of tactics, what are those tactics, Lauren? What are the basic things that every player it can be assumed to be doing outside of, you know, the specifics of an adventure?
Well, I'm glad you've asked, Luis. Let me run through the names real quick, and then we'll talk about them.
Sure.
You've got avoid notice, defend, detect magic, follow the expert, hustle, investigate, repeat a spell, scout, and search. Now, my favorite of these is also the very first one, because I happen to be a rogue main. Avoid notice is where you're sneaking around. You're trying not to be seen in case an encounter happens. So you're going to roll stealth, and you're going to travel at half of your speed. And what this does is if an encounter starts, you'll roll stealth instead of perception for this encounter, which has its own advantages. For instance, rogues will use that quite often with a lot of their class feats. And if I'm the GM and the enemy's perception doesn't beat that player's stealth, I'm probably going to give them a bonus to their initiative for being undetected.
And this is a thing that I can talk about with all of the exploration tactics, but just because they happen to be doing the sneaking around avoid notice one doesn't necessarily mean you are away from the party. You could be all clumped together in the same hallway, but it just happens to be that the rogue is trying to stick to the shadows in such a way that it's harder to see them when initiative starts. So you don't have to go out of the way and be 10 feet away from the entire party just because you're trying to hide. You can be doing all of these tactics, regardless of what they are, when you're all traveling down the same hallway in a straight line. So just keep that in mind.
The barbarian's a big old boy. He makes a lot of shadow to hide in.
Sure does. So the next tactic here is another basic tactic. It's called defend. And all it's saying is that you keep your shield up and travel at half speed while you're moving around. So when combat does break out, you already have your shield raised and ready to go on the very first round without having to do any extra actions for that.
What I like about this is that there's a lot of class feats in this game, like stances and other such things, where you have to already be in combat to activate the stance. Raise a shield is an action that gives you an AC bonus. Defend lets you just begin with that AC bonus, even if you're at the bottom of initiative.
The next tactic is detect magic. This is a spell that so many people use so often that we gave it an entire tactic all its own. With detect magic, you are moving slowly and using your detect magic spell, detect magic cantrip, to notice if there are any magical auras. So it specifically calls out that you're moving at such a rate that you don't accidentally walk into an aura before you notice it. So it does slow you down when you're moving around, but it does also let you be aware of stuff before it's too late.
What I like our next one quite a bit. Everyone has been in a similar situation to what I'm about to describe.
Mm-hmm.
You come to a cliff that you need to scale because at the top of it is the bad guy's evil fortress. But you are a spellcaster who doesn't have athletics. And you've already used your fly for the day. How are you going to get up this? You're going to have to climb. So you can use the follow the expert exploration mode action. What this lets you do is it lets you pick an ally who is going to be using athletics and is an expert in it. And it lets you add your level as a proficiency bonus, even though you're untrained. And on top of that, since your ally is an expert, you can have a +2 to it. If your ally is a master, you can also have a +3 to it. It really helps folks who need the help get where they need to be. And that's not just for athletics. You can use this for any number of skills. Maybe survival to follow tracks.
My home group uses it a lot for stealth, for sneaking around. And then they combine that with the quiet ally feat, so they all just have to make a single roll and let the rogue take care of all the rolling, so they don't have to feel bad about their big heavy armor making too much noise.
Which always happens.
Always happens. Next up is the hustle tactic, where you move at twice the speed you normally would move around. This is, we need to get from point A to point B a lot faster, and we're not going to worry about finding traps or detecting any magic auras or anything. And you can do this for at least 10 minutes, depending on how your constitution looks. Whatever your modifier is times 10 minutes will determine how much you can individually hustle. There are also general feats out there in the APG that improve that for the party as a whole. But by default, it's just assuming you are the one hustling. And it could be that you hustle while no one else hustles and you leave everyone else behind. But this is how you move quickly in exploration mode and can do so for quite a while, actually.
The investigate exploration action is how Dr. Jones moves through the temple corridors while reading the hieroglyphics, looking for clues to the traps and the hidden secrets that might lay ahead. When you use the investigate action, you can use recall knowledge as a secret check to discover those clues while you're moving, but you're still going to be moving at half speed. And this is something that the GM is going to have to just kind of be aware of. Like, yeah, let's roll the secret check for them at this point and tell them what's going on.
Next is repeat a spell. So Detect Magic had its very specific tactic, but repeat a spell is for any other spell that you're going to be casting a lot during exploration mode. Typically a cantrip, because it's assumed that you have enough spell slots or castings of it to do so repeatedly through exploration mode. The thing I used to see a lot in Pathfinder First Edition was someone constantly casting guidance on an ally every minute or so to give them the extra little bonus on their initiative or whatever skill check they were doing. And you could do something similar here. But it does specifically call out, if you do this for more than 10 minutes, it becomes tiring because you keep yelling out in a strong voice and doing your somatic components every 6 seconds. And that can probably get old really quick. So you probably wouldn't be doing this a lot. But if you're going from room 1 to room 2 in a dungeon, you can say, oh, I'm going to have guidance or something else ready to go, and probably have a short enough time frame where it's not going to cause you to become fatigued.
Some other fun ones would be Mage Hand. You need to carry around this ball of acid, or for some reason, or one of my personal favorites, the shield spell. You want to go into the next combat ready to go.
Yep.
Another tried and true classic is the scout action. And this one's pretty simple. You don't need to roll any d20s for this. You simply say that you are scouting, and then you move at half your speed, and at the start of the next encounter, the whole party gets +1 to initiative. You can't go wrong by having somebody scout.
And again, I'll call out that this is not something where you have to move away from the party to be scouting. You don't have to be out in advance to notice someone before the rest of the party does. It just happens to be what you're doing is keeping an eye out for other things while the wizard is distracted with casting Detect Magic and the fighter is distracted with raising a shield. You are specifically calling things out in advance, which can be done right next to everyone else in the group.
You got your peepers on call. And on top of that, if I was a GM and there was some hidden goblins lying up ahead, I would definitely roll a secret perception check for the character who is scouting before anybody else's, or maybe just give them a bonus to that.
Yeah. And finally, what I think is probably the most common tactic in the game is search. You specifically are searching for hidden doors, hazards like traps and so on, and you are moving at half your speed, but the GM will be noting that you are searching for stuff and either grant you a secret or will either grant you a perception check to seek and notice things, or maybe do so secretly, depending on the GM style or what feats and class features you might have in effect. The Rogue has the trap sensibility that lets them notice traps secretly without having to actively search for them and things like that. But search is you're looking around for stuff to make sure you're not either getting ambushed or falling into a trap, or you might be looking for items through a room. You might say, I'm searching the room under the bed and through the drawers and all that stuff to see if there's any treasure to find.
Now, Luis, give me a little bit of an explanation here.
Yeah.
Because I've always kind of thought of search as an action that excludes creatures, excludes hostiles. You're looking for inanimate things like traps and poisons and papers on a desk. But you're not necessarily looking for the assassin.
I guess that's true. It specifically says you if you come across secret doors, items, or hazards, things like that, the GM will do the check. So you might call out specifically to the GM, hey, I'm looking for creatures rather than items or traps and the like. There is no specific locate creature.
Well, there's Scout.
There's Scout, but Scout is there to give you a bonus to initiative more than anything else. It doesn't say that you are looking for... It says you're noticing danger and warning your allies in advance to grant them the plus one circumstance bonus to their initiative roll. It doesn't specifically say. And you are also detecting creatures in the process. So I think search would still cover this. It's really how much of a stickler you are for the rules as to, are you searching for hazards or items or hidden doors or creatures? Mm. I would say if you're doing the search action, I would say covers all of those, because ultimately you're going to be using the same role for that, which is perception.
To our listeners at home, think about it, read the book, talk to your group about it, do what works best for you.
Yes.
The point of the game is to have fun, not to follow the rules to the T.
There are a few more exploration activities you can do here that are called out on the page that we're looking at, page 480, that are tied to very specific skills. So we're going to quickly run these over. Each of these are detailed specifically in the skills section, not in the exploration mode section. And it's not assumed that these are default actions, because not everyone may necessarily be trained in these skills. But you can use things like Arcana to borrow to learn a spell from someone else's spell book and prepare that, or Coerce to use intimidation to get someone to work with you.
Yeah, cover tracks so that you're harder to be tracked. You could use decipher writing to kind of figure out what this codex says.
You might be gathering information with diplomacy, asking people around town different stuff, or identifying different things like alchemical items using craft, or magic using the various magic related skills like arcana and occultism.
You could be impersonating by creating a disguise and rolling deception. Or maybe you're trying to learn a spell by rolling that corresponding skill.
You might also be talking to people with diplomacy to make an impression, which usually takes at least a minute of time. Or you might be using your repair kit and your crafting skills to repair something. I use repair a lot to knock out the damage on my shield for my shield fighter.
You could roll survival to, wait for it, no direction. You could use acrobatics to squeeze through a very tight space.
There's also track, which is a survival skill where you follow a creature's tracks. And the one I think I see the most often, more than anything else, which is the treat wound skill, which is part of the medicine skill where you use to patch people up and restore hit points with your medicine expertise. And beyond these exploration tactics, there's a little bit more going on with exploration mode. Exploration mode is one of the three modes in the Pathfinder 2nd Edition rules that determines what kind of stuff you're doing. The one you see most often is encounter mode, that's combat. And one you see when you're not out in adventuring is the downtime mode. You use that to craft new items or just hang out in town, shop, and things like that. But exploration mode covers everything in between, which can include moving around in a dungeon. It can include overland travel. There's actually a specific chart that tells you how far you travel overland when you're in exploration mode. And it includes also things like resting and daily preparation. So anything that isn't combat and just hanging out in town is considered exploration mode. And not everything may require an exploration mode tactic, but you probably can apply a tactic of some kind to anything you're doing in exploration mode.
Exploration mode is going to have the rules for you. When your party sits around the campfire for 8 hours and asks how many hit points to get back, this is where you look for that.
Yep. As I mentioned earlier, with my group, and this is something you can clearly do with your group if you want, you don't have to call out the specific exploration mode tactics that you're doing at any given time if you don't want to. It is very useful for newer GMs or for a table that wants to make sure everyone is clear on what's going on. But like I mentioned, for my group, they will just say, oh, I'm searching the room, and I'm, you know, the rogue will say, I'm looking for traps. The druid will say, I'm, you know, detecting any magical auras. And the fighter might say, oh, okay, I'm looking for monsters. And I know specifically that those map to the search tactic and the detect magic tactics specifically, and then can make rolls as needed and give them the information based on that. And an exploration mode activity isn't something you're locked into for a certain amount of time. When you say, I'm scouting, you're not going to be scouting for specifically 10 minutes or something like that. You just scout until you say, okay, I'm going to do something else now. So if you're the type of group that prefers to be more narrative about what you're doing, that's totally fine. You can just say, I'm searching around, or I'm keeping an eye out for monsters, things like that. And as long as the GM is willing to work with that, they can map those to the appropriate tactics as needed based on the narrative going on.
I do prefer to be a little bit more narrative about it. Okay, while I'm in here, I'm going to be looking around for spider webs. I have a feeling that I think there's going to be spiders in this area. I like to do that. But I also do like that these very cut and dry actions are here, because I have ran into some adversarial GMs in the past, especially if you play in society and you're not always sure which GM you're going to get. It's good to have these tools in your pocket. I used to have a GM who would make you say, I check for traps, every 5 feet of movement in the hallway.
Ugh.
It was the worst. Or, yeah, stuff like that. So with this, you can just say, I am using the search action in exploration mode. That's not going to reset after 5 feet of hallway. It's going to keep going. So when that adversarial GM says, uh-huh, you run into this trap because you didn't say a check for traps. Hold on, this is second edition. Search covered that. I'm good to go. On top of that, if there were any secret doors, you need to give me a check for that, because that's also covered in the search action. It kind of lets you have a little bit of rules as written to defend yourself from adversarial GMs.
Yeah, and if you are a newer GM or a newer player, it also just explains what exactly are you doing when you're looking around. I know that this isn't, I think, very adversarial, but I know some GMs will specifically request that you tell them, oh, I'm searching the desk, or I'm searching the drawers, before they will give you a perception check to notice the hidden items within the specific location that you're searching around. But with the search tactic, it just says you are very meticulous, so you can kind of use that as a blanket a tactic for looking through the entirety of the room without specifically calling, oh, well, you didn't say you looked under the bed, so you missed that 10 gold that was fallen under the bed. You know, this kind of covers all the broad strokes for most of what people are doing.
I'm going to go out on a limb here, too, and say for most groups, I would recommend maybe you don't require the players to specifically nab under the mattress. And I'll tell you why. When you look around, say, any room that you occupy, there's like 100 things, you know? Mm-hmm. You've got the desk, you've got like your mouse pad that you could be hiding a key under, you've got under the television, there's so many things. And to expect a player to even be aware of everything going on in that room with just a mental picture and then call out each and everything, just let them roll perception. And if they get high enough, hey, you found the key under the mouse pad. But you know, if that's not your style, do what you like doing. That's just a recommendation from me to you. Take it or leave it.
Yeah, a lot of pre-written adventures will specifically call out, oh, if the PCs look under the bed or they search the desk. And the search tactic probably covers all of those specific call-outs. You're probably okay with letting them have that.
Search the desk is probably fine. You know, you come across a desk, like, there's going to be something in there. I search the desk. I feel like that one's fine.
Yeah, but no one's going to fault you for not asking players to search every specific book on the bookshelf.
But speaking of asking, we have some questions from you, our dear and cherished listeners. From user Vanessa Hoskins, who I swear I've never met before, my groups tend to be used to describing exactly what they're doing in a specific moment. I'm searching under the bed. I'm looking for treasure. I want to figure out how to open this puzzle box. What's the best way to incorporate exploration mode for a group like this to avoid situations such as, well, you didn't say you were looking for traps, so it goes off. No one decided to search the bookshelf.
I think this is the inverse of what we were just talking about. Rather than needing people to specifically call out the exact place that they're searching, if they call out an exact place that they're searching, they are searching, and you can broaden that to include the entire room. Oh, you were looking under the bed for the treasure. You didn't find anything, but also when you stood up and looked around, you noticed that there's a hidden door in the northern wall. Things like that. It's the same tactics are being applied. It's just from the very narrow and broadening up to the general tactics rather than starting with the general tactics and letting you use that for a very specific result.
Yeah. Now, what I would do in this situation is if the players say, I'm using the search action, boom, just throw that D20, see what they get, tell them what they find. But if it was under the mattress, the thing, the MacGuffin, and the players say, I search under the mattress, I'd just toss that D20 aside and say, you found it. You know? Like, reward people for being creative like that.
Yeah, that's actually a great way to do it. They figured out the exact hiding spot. They don't need to make any roll at that point. Mm-hmm. That's really great. Okay, so we got two questions that were very similar, one from user Brian Lane and one from our patron Faux Clan. That was basically asking, how do we go from exploration mode into encounter mode, specifically referring to ambushes and surprises and things like that. So I'm going to read both of these questions really quick, but they're basically going to be answered in the same way. So Faux Clan asks, how the heck does surprise work? I know there aren't surprise rounds anymore, but how do you transition from walking around doing exploration stuff to being ambushed by a monster? And Brian Lane asks, how do I transition from a party's checks to investigate a room to rolling for initiative to determine who noticed the kobolds in the room leaping out at them?
Well, what I would say here is that you kind of just... I don't think you do a smooth transition here. I would arbitrate that you just go from one end to the other. You have... And when you say one party member searches one wall, another party member searches the opposite wall. I mean, these are just two players both using the search action, and, you know, you give them what they find. Maybe give one a bonus against that wall, and the other gets a bonus against the opposite wall or something. Inspecting food scraps on the floor to how recently they were chewed on, that sounds like a survival thing to me. If they find something to investigate and, you know, it tells them about the kobolds about to leap out at them, if you're about to go from exploration into encounter mode, just give them a bonus for what they found because they weren't surprised. We touched on this a little bit in the initiative episode. Surprise round isn't a thing, but that doesn't mean that surprise isn't a thing. It's just baked into initiative now. So if they were searching the walls and they didn't find anything, another player was searching the food scraps and they did find something, and now the kobolds come out, give the player who found the something, give them a +1 to their initiative because they weren't surprised. That's kind of how it's handled in second edition right now. So just do it. Just roll it. Just roll that initiative.
Yeah, another way you can do it, which if you're looking for kind of hard rules, this is probably the closest you're going to get, but there's not an official surprise round or transition in the exploration to encounter mode stuff. But one thing you can do, let's say there's four kobolds hiding in the room. The group comes in, start searching the room. Those who are searching, you can say, okay, I'm going to make a perception check for you. And you check that result versus the stealth DC of the kobolds. And if the kobolds have a stealth of plus 10, and that means the stealth DC is 20, whoever rolls a 20 or better notices, oh, there are kobolds there, and they are completely aware of them at that exact moment. And as soon as you say, okay, there are kobolds here, let's roll some initiative. The kobolds rolled with stealth, but whoever didn't beat that stealth DC, whoever didn't notice the kobolds, is unaware of the kobolds until they have acted. And that means the kobolds could get a sneak attack off on that particular player, or the player might not know to act with the knowledge that the kobolds are there just yet. They might know, oh, something's happening, everyone's getting ready to fight, but I don't see the enemies yet. I guess all I can do is maybe cast shield and move out of the way or something like that. It requires a little blocking off of that meta knowledge that I'm in combat now, and I know that there are kobolds around because my other buddies know that there are kobolds around, but my character specifically doesn't know there are kobolds around until the kobolds have finally jumped out and I can see them. So you're going to have to work as a table to understand that sometimes this happens and some of you notice things and some of you don't, and you just have to work under the assumptions of, well, I don't know that there are kobolds here yet. I can hear the fight music, but I don't see anything. So I guess I'll just have to wait and prepare myself for that. You could delay. You could cast defensive spells or move out of the way, whatever the case might be. But you just can't target the kobolds because you haven't seen them yet.
And speaking of surprise rounds, most of us remember back in the day when if you didn't go first or if you hadn't acted in a surprise round, you were flat-footed until you did activate. Well, that's no longer the default here in second edition. It instead is something that's baked into the rogue as a class feature. When the rogue uses stealth or deception as their initiative, such as kobolds jumping out of a hiding spot, they will treat enemies who haven't acted yet as flat-footed.
Yeah.
So there you go. Round.
Yeah, there's a lot of ways you can handle it. There's no nice, clean surprise round that you can transition between the two phases. So do what feels best. Give bonuses where you think it feels right. Give penalties where you think it feels right. And just make sure everyone is acting based on their character knowledge more than anything else.
What feels right is to take this next question from Andrew Sturtvant.
Andrew something.
Yeah. When using a tactical map in exploration mode, how do you handle players moving their tokens, especially on the virtual tabletop, around? Should the player doing the scouting activity always stay in front? What if you have some players constantly moving their tokens around versus the one or two that don't move their tokens around to catch up with the group until combat started?
This is a thing I had to deal with. My main group is all through virtual tabletop, and sometimes, for a number of reasons, they just don't move all of their tokens at once. Sometimes it's just, oh, there's lag, and I actually can't move my token yet, or they're lazy, whatever the case might be. But what we do is we just decide in advance, okay, here's what everyone's doing, and we just move the one token around, and it's a quasi-theater of the mind at that moment. We know that everyone is moving together, and we keep track of the tactics or whatever they have narratively said they're going to do, and then catch their tokens up once something happens. If they find a secret door, okay, then we move all the tokens to right where that secret door is, or if they are about to get into an encounter, we move everyone into the right spot. So I think you can just kind of keep a theater of the mind mindset for that and let people talk about what they're doing without having their tokens specifically represent exactly what's going on. The one thing to be wary about is people who are moving their tokens around a lot might end up noticing things and stumbling onto things before you want them to. And that's just some conditioning you have to put into your players that, hey, hold on, don't move so quickly ahead of me before I explain what you find, because they might stumble upon an enemy or something before they were supposed to.
And we do the same thing in our local, like, home physical tabletop games, where we kind of pull the party's miniatures off the table for a moment we establish the marching order or say their formation, and then we put the lead token back on the board so that when that piece moves, it's just known that the rest of the party is in the formation that you can look at over to the side of the map and just see what it is. But if you've got a character who wants to, you know, just keep breaking formation or going off on their own, you just give them, you know, like, just kind of give both sets of movers the same amount of time. So, like, if the party goes forward, like, 30 feet, okay, if you're trying to go off on your own, you've got 30 feet that you can do that in right now. All right, you've both done your movement. Let's do it again. How far do you want to move? How far do you want to move? Just kind of babysit for a minute. Just kind of manage these two groups and make them kind of go at the same pace. That way you don't have one guy who's just, like, super zealous, just moving, zipping all over the dungeon while everybody else is just kind of being patient and waiting for them to finish.
Yeah. And as for keeping people separate based on their tactic, the scout, as we mentioned earlier, doesn't actually have to be in front of everyone. They can be with the entire group and just happen to be, you know, standing on their tippy toes looking around to make sure they notice enemies before anyone else.
Yeah, the word scout just carries that connotation of I'm out in front, I'm looking for bad guys. But, I mean, you don't have to be doing that. It's just, the word sounds like you're doing that, but really it just means foes are the only thing you're looking for. You're not looking for traps. You're not looking for secret messages. You are looking for threats. That's the scout action.
All right, our last question here is from user Karas Tarun, who asks, should a GM allow abilities which improve your skills, like raging or entering in stance, and so on, basically a lot of the encounter mode abilities, should they allow you to use those in exploration mode? Rules as written, I tend to go with no, but it seems somehow wrong to be less capable or weaker or clumsier just because you happen to be in the wrong game mode.
Yeah, this is something that I feel like I've seen this come up a lot. I've seen a lot of questions and discussions about this. So I'm certain that a lot of other groups have too. I see three ways you can handle this. By the rules as written, no, you can't do it. You can't take the mountain stance before you break the door down. You gotta wait till you roll initiative. The other one? By the rule, cool. Just allow it if you like it, and it's not breaking your game. Sure, do it. Mountain stance. Bam. Done. But what I'm going to recommend, my third option, is the one that I think is the best. You kind of got to blend these two, and you can still make it work in the rules as written. Okay? If the barbarian wants to fly into a rage and then break the door down, just say, cool. Roll initiative. Just do it right then. Bam. If the rules say you have to be in combat for this, just start it. Just start the combat. You know, have the enemies roll with a penalty because they don't know this is going on. Have the players roll with a positive because they're initiating this as a surprise. And just go from there.
Yeah, and I could entirely see you calling for an initiative roll when the barbarian rages and then kicks down the door, and then finding an empty room. And for just one round of combat, everyone's an initiative for just a bit to see, we're amped up and, you know, adrenaline's rushing and we think there might be a fight, but nothing happens. Okay, that's fine. And sometimes nothing will happen, but maybe if the barbarian yells and kicks down the door, the enemies two rooms down hear that and then come back to see what's going on over the span of 30 seconds or something, and suddenly the barbarian is either decided, oh, I'm not going to be in my rage anymore, or is still raging, and suddenly a new initiative begins, and they're ready to go for that. It's up to you, as Lauren mentioned, specific things like stances call out that you can only be in a stance in encounter mode. That's very specific just to avoid some weird shenanigans going on with stuff. There might be stances later on that let you do weird jumps off of enemies or something. And you're like, oh, I'm going to enter the stance to jump off my buddies and get up higher with them when I need to. And that's not what it's really intended for. So I think rolling initiative whenever you want to do this stuff is a decent result on that, or a decent choice for that. But really up to you. I don't think in your home game letting the monk be ready to go in mountain stance, just like the shield, the fighter has the shield raised at all times, is really going to ruin the game or anything like that.
And I think that the reason this kind of feels weird, awkward, or maybe even uncomfortable is because if you roll the initiative and there are enemies down the other side, in theory, the enemies might roll higher. And now you're sitting here thinking, if I'm going to kick the door in, how is it that these people who are not aware kick the door in first? Well, as the GM, you've got to just make the call that they don't. If the enemies roll higher but they don't know that this is happening, just have the enemies waste their turn. That's how you finagle it. You don't have to just... Or, on the other hand, if the enemies do have an idea that this is going on, if maybe it's possible they could hear the barbarian preparing for this, maybe they do turn the tables on them. You just gotta feel it out in the situation. Just don't be afraid to do what you think's cool. You know? The rules will let you do it. Your players will let you do it. Just have fun. But have we explored exploration mode enough? That's all we have for you today. Make sure you check out the rest of our content on the No Direction Network. If you like this show or any of our other blogs or shows, please consider supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/NoDirection. It's the support of our Patreons that make this all possible.
Until next time, I'm Luis.
And I'm Lauren.
Thanks for listening to Legend Lore. And as always, it's been legendary.